Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and today I'll be talking with one of the few people on Earth who have actually gone beyond the boundaries of this planet. Astronaut Mike Massimino will join me to discuss how he realized his childhood dreams of going to space and why that work gave him a more profound sense of God and heaven. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is former NASA astronaut Mike Massimino. Like a lot of kids, Mike found himself inspired by watching Neil Armstrong walk on the moon in 1969. And that event planted the seed that would eventually lead Mike to become an astronaut himself and be a part of two space shuttle missions, including the historic repair of the Hubble Space Telescope. In his new memoir entitled Spaceman, Mike recalls the challenges he faced on the road to becoming an astronaut, how the experience of being in space affected his Catholic faith, and how his father's example shaped his own work ethic. Joining me now to share his story, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Mike Massimino. Mike, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Now, your journey to being an astronaut started in Long Island, New York, when you were 6 years old on July 20th, 1969. Tell us about that day and how it shaped your future.
Well, that was the day we landed people on the moon. I was 6 years old, and I remember watching that. Anyone who was alive who has a memory remembers it at that time. Anyone who was old enough to remember it was on the planet had some sort of story to tell about that day. It was one of those days, and they know exactly where they were at the time. And so I was in my living room in Long Island with my parents and my family, and we were watching on the black and white TV and got to see those first steps taken by Neil Armstrong on the moon. And that whole lead up to it, even the missions before that, you know, the excitement, it was the summertime, so there wasn't much else going on school-wise or anything like that to distract us, and so we could really focus on what was happening with the moon launch. And the astronauts were my heroes. I thought these were the coolest people alive, and I wanted to grow up to be just like them.
Right, right. Well, it's almost a cliche to say that in America, kids can grow up to be anything they want to be. Yet, in the book you write, "Where I Came From, Kids Didn't Grow Up to Be Astronauts." Why did your goals seem unrealistic at that time?
I think as I got older, you know, not much older. By the time I reached, I was six when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. By the time I was about eight or nine, I kind of got the sense of that. You know, it was just a ridiculous goal. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't. You know, I was scared of heights. I wasn't very fearless at all. You know, I was scared of the water. I didn't swim very well. You know, didn't like the dark. Didn't like heights, couldn't see well. You know, it just, you know, it didn't seem like I was one of these kind of guys who did this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just seemed impossible. I mean, how do you go and do something like that? You start to get older, you start realizing that there's a lot of people in the world alive, and only a couple are going to get a chance to do that. And so what's the likelihood that you'll ever get a chance to do that? Zero. I had no idea. I thought it was impossible. So it was like kind of growing up to wanting to be a superhero. It just wasn't going to happen.
Right, right. I'm talking to Mike Massimino about his book, Spaceman, An Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. Well, in light of what you just said, and in the book you describe yourself as an awkward kid who could have been his own science experiment, along the road to becoming an astronaut, how big a challenge was dealing with your own self-doubts?
I think it was a big deal for me, the idea of not knowing whether or not I could ever do it and really not believing that I did. And even after I've done it, I still kind of find it hard to believe that I got to do that for as long as I did. But I think, you know, self-doubt for me anyway is always kind of played into it. I don't know if it's just a general lack of confidence or just, I think in this case, it's a little bit different, though. I think, you know, trying to be an astronaut, I feel like someone who says, "Oh, I'm going to be an astronaut." You know, every once in a while you meet someone who's kind of cocky about it, you know, and generally that's not necessarily the kind of trait that's going to get there, truthfully, I think. You know, it's because you have to respect the process a bit and realize that there are lots of people that want to do this job, and there are lots of people that want it badly and are qualified to do the job. And really, to get selected to do it, there's a certain element of good fortune that comes into play. And so I think that part of it was self-doubt, oh, I could never do it. And the other part was that, you know, really no one could ever really do it, because the chances are that you're going to get picked, the chances are so low. That I think anyone who says, no brainer, I'm going to become an astronaut,
yeah,
I think they're kidding themselves, because, and I don't think that that's fair to the other people that are trying. I think there's so many good people that you need to respect the process and realize that it is unlikely. But in my case, I thought it was, you know, near impossible.
Yeah, well, it sounds like humility was a part of your just kind of your makeup. And I think that from reading the book, I think that goes back to your mom and dad. So tell me a little bit about them and how they shaped the person you've become.
My parents grew up in the Depression. They were both born in the 1920s, and my mom's still alive. She just turned 90. My father died years ago. I talk about that because he died back in 1998 after I became an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
But my folks, they grew up during the Depression, and they didn't have opportunities to go to college like me and my brother and my sister did. They just didn't. I think, you know, now they were very good students. I think in today's day and age, it would have been a much different life for them with opportunities that now are available. But neither one of them had a chance to go to college. But they were hardworking people and smart, and they wanted their kids to get a good education. They encouraged us. You know, I was the youngest, so at some point, I don't know if it was encouragement or just that, you know, they didn't, you know, they were too tired raising my brother and my sister by the time I showed up. Like, we don't care what you do. So I wasn't like, but they definitely weren't up. They didn't throw up any obstacles. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I think the idea was to try to be a good person and to try to work as hard as you can and do the best you can. We pick up a lot from our parents, good and bad. I think there was a lot of the good was working hard, trying to be honest, and getting along with people. And trying to be a good person, I think is what they stressed for me and my brother and my sister growing up. And you know, they didn't have any expectations of what we would become. But they showed us how to work hard and to be loyal and a good friend and a good person.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things that I kind of touched me when reading your book is you're writing about your father and his belonging to a brotherhood that had a shared sense of purpose. And I felt like that could also be said of your career as an astronaut. What kind of work did your father do, and how did that shared sense of purpose kind of come into the picture and really be a model for you in your life?
Well, my father was he didn't go to college, but he took some courses at NYU in safety engineering, and he worked. He started working. He had different jobs, but when he grew up on a farm, and when he left the farm when he was in his 20s, and after he went in the Army, and he moved to New York, right around the time when he met my mom and got married, he worked for a few different companies, and he worked for a fire extinguisher company, and then ended up getting a job with the city as a fire inspector.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked with a lot of firemen and with other inspectors, and the whole camaraderie, the culture, the brotherhood or sisterhood at the fire department, the New York City Fire Department, is quite strong. And the idea of people working together to do something good to help others was seen as something that was important, and you know, doing something that was socially useful,
mm-hmm,
was something that became important to me, and not just going out there and trying to make money or seek fame or whatever it might be, but to try to do something that was socially useful, that was making the world a better place. And then the fun part of it, I think you were touching on, was just the camaraderie, the brotherhood of being together, kind of like being on a team. You know, I was on sports teams in high school. It was about the extent of my athletic career, the fun part of it was being part of a team with the guys in the locker room or on the bus going to a game, or you know, hanging out after the game talking about what was happening, and you know, going through that you know, the battle of an athletic match together in a team sport was something that that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the camaraderie of it more than I did, I think, the actual playing of the sport, playing the sports I did through high school. And those are some of the best friendships. I still some of my best friendships to this day are the guys I played sports with growing up. And you always have that bond. And I remember my one of our coaches, Mr. Walpole, said that. He said, you're gonna remember each other forever. When you see each other 30, 40 years from now, you're going to say, hey, remember that game against this team, blah, 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 blah. And that's what he's right, you know, and I still see Mr. Walpole once in a while. So, you know, it's that sort of camaraderie that I think kind of went away for me a little bit, because it's hard to get that true feeling. I mean, people get that in the workplace. And when I speak at companies, I try to portray what we did in the astronaut office and maybe in the fire department that I learned from my dad, mm-hmm. of how you treat your coworkers. And certainly once I got to the astronaut office, you know, the only way you're going to succeed is that job is by working together. And it's not only succeeding in your mission, but it's also keeping each other alive,
yeah.
which has a whole different aspect to it, is that you're dependent on your teammates to keep you alive, and they're depending on you to keep them alive when you're doing a lot of these things. And I don't want to be overly dramatic, but that's actually the case when you're flying in a jet or you're doing a spacewalk or flying in space. You all have to work together. And it leads to these extraordinary experiences that you do together and these bonds and friendships. And with the quality of people that we're lucky enough to have at NASA and in the astronaut office, it leads to a very enriching life. And so that was something I sought out. It was one of the reasons I wanted to become an astronaut, was to experience that type of camaraderie with my coworkers.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up, and I'm talking to Mike Massimino. He is a NASA astronaut. He served as one from 1996 to 2014. He's a veteran of two space flights to the Hubble telescope. And let me just touch on the Hubble telescope issue now, because you basically, you spacewalked and you helped save this telescope and kept it working so it could give us insights into the mysteries of the universe. And that's a level of responsibility not a lot of people have. Were you scared at that at all, or were you just kind of confident and focused on doing what you had to do?
No, it's interesting. I wasn't necessarily confident. I was concerned about it. It was a big responsibility. You know, I write about it in the book a little bit, having a conversation with one of my friends where, you know, we were getting ready for our space flights coming up. And actually mine was over and his was coming up, and he was on a space lab flight. And he was saying, wow, you know, if you would have screwed up that telescope, the whole world would have been mad at you. Yeah, but, you know, you've got a lot of, responsibility on your flight. He goes, well, if I screw up someone's experiment, I'll probably have about 17 people really mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there'll be 17 people really mad. But if you would have broken Hubble, you would have had the whole world mad at you. Like, yeah, I guess that's kind of right. You know, having 17 people mad at you, really mad, isn't good. But the whole world kind of irritated is not good. It was probably worse. And but I think what it is that you know, you're given this opportunity as an astronaut, and then you're given responsibilities on your space flights. And I felt Hubble was really a special one to have, a special responsibility to have, because it's something not just for scientists to get data and then publish a paper. It does unlock the secrets of the universe. It shows us what's out there, the wonder of the universe and the creation that's out there that we can't get to.
Yeah.
Hubble allows us to see it, and it comes up with these discoveries that are amazing, you know, things like the existence of black holes, planets in other solar systems, dark energy, dark matter, the size and the age of the universe. I mean, these are things that Hubble has told us and is continuing to give us more information about.
Mm-hmm.
And just the beauty and the wonder, even if you don't have an appreciation for any of that, just seeing the beauty, beautiful pictures of what is out there, how beautiful the universe is. So we were in direct line to destroy the whole thing, Tony. And, you know, my foot in the wrong place could have taken out the whole telescope. So yeah, I was a little concerned about it. But it was such a responsibility that you really couldn't be too much of a nervous Nelly. I mean, even though I tend to be a nervous Nelly, I couldn't afford to be one, because I think that would have run the risk of destroying the mission and the telescope with it.
Well, thankfully, the world was grateful to you instead of angry at you, because you did manage to do the job right. So that's a good thing.
That's right. Right. We didn't want my book to be a tragedy. We wanted it to be a good story. Yeah.
I'm talking to Mike Massimino about his book, Spaceman, An Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. You know, you just mentioned seeing the Earth from outer space. And this is a Catholic radio show, so I have to ask about this, as you're a lifelong Catholic yourself. And one of my favorite chapters in the book is when you write about how being in outer space made you think of heaven. So I'm curious, how did that experience shape your thoughts on God and life and our place in the universe?
Well, there are several moments there, Tony. You know, one that you're talking about with heaven was that on my second spacewalk, on my first flight, I had two spacewalks, and on the second one, I had a little more time, I was a little more comfortable out there. And when you're out there in a spacewalk, you're not constrained by looking at through the window. You're actually out there, and you can look anywhere you want. And at the altitude of where Hubble is, it's 100 miles higher than the space station, so you can see the curvature of the planet from up there. And you know, you can look and turn your head and see the stars and the moon, or the universe out there, and you can turn and you see blackness, you see stars, and it's beautiful and so on. But you turn and you can see the real beauty of our planet. And our planet is beautiful when we're walking around it. You know, if you go to almost anything, even a big city can be beautiful in some ways, or a mountain range or an ocean or whatever you might see. You see the beauty in our planet when we're walking around it. Mm-hmm. You see the detail because we're right up close. But when you look at it from afar, from a distance, it's a different perspective. And the beauty of it is really indescribable. And the thought that I think you're referring to that went through my head when I really had a chance to look at it, and I just lost myself in the beauty of our planet, I thought to myself, this must be the view from heaven. Mm-hmm. If you could be in heaven, this is how you would see. This is how we would look. This is how you would see us. And then I dwelled on that for a moment, and I thought, no, that's wrong. It's more beautiful than that. This is what heaven must look like. Mm-hmm. And I believe that. I believe that this is a paradise that we're living in. And there's a lot of bad things that happen, but there's also a lot of love that exists here, too. Mm-hmm. And the other thought that I had related to the faith on my spacewalks that I want to share with you was, I thought of, the idea that as a father, as a parent, we try to provide our families with a nice home, and our kids with a nice home and a nice environment and a good house to grow up in. If you can do that, or you do the best you can. Mm-hmm. And when I saw our home, another thought I had during another spacewalk was looking at our home, that how much God the Father must love us to give us such a beautiful place to live.
Yeah,
I really believe we are living in paradise. I can only imagine what heaven would be like, but I can't imagine anything being more beautiful than our planet. And I think we really need to appreciate what we have. And you can look at it from different angles. You can look at it from a pure environmental angle. We need to keep the planet nice. We can't wreck it, mm-hmm. and take care of it as best we can. But I think you can also look at it from so much of a spiritual point of view, which is that this really is a paradise that we have. There's opportunities here to live in such a beautiful place that we should take advantage of and be grateful for.
Yeah. It sounds like that just that experience really gave you a piece of soul. And I would even say it sounds like you kind of got this insight into the divine through that. So, I think it's, well, not all of us can see the earth from space, but we can all kind of see the beauty around us if we open our eyes to it, I think is what you're saying.
I think that's the way to look at it. Sometimes even when I was out upstate New York with my family, with my kids, and we were looking at just looking out on the in the mountains and the trees, and it's given me a different perspective even on that. I think you need to look around and appreciate it. And I always enjoy being with people that say, "Hey, look how beautiful that sunset is." Mm-hmm. There are people like that. I'm not always like that, but but I think it's important for us to appreciate what we have around us, and to appreciate the sunsets and the sunrises and the birds and the animals and our families and everything around us, because there really is a lot of beauty. There's a lot of bad stuff too, but I think that there's a great opportunity to see the beauty that's around us on this planet. And when you see it from space, it is so obvious.
Yeah.
And I do my best to try to take it with me down here, but sometimes I forget and get grumpy.
As do we all. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Mike Massimino about his book, Spaceman: An Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. You mentioned your kids before, and you dedicate this book to those kids, Gabby and Daniel. So I'm curious, how did having children influence the way you approached your life and career? Did it just make you see things differently?
The relationship of having children is a whole different, it's a whole different way of life, I guess. It changes you as soon as a child is born. Everything is different, and most of it's positive. There are some tough times in the teenage years, but mm-hmm. other than that, I think it's a very positive and wonderful experience. And I don't know what my kids would say. I think they might say I'm a bit of annoying and overbearing on them a bit, but what am I going to do? I'm trying to get better. As they're older, because they're adults now. They're both of them are in their 20s and doing really well. But mm-hmm. I think for me as a dad, it was fun to try to share as much as I could with them of what I was doing but the way it influenced me, I think it gave me a sense of purpose having kids and trying to do the best for them and trying to lead by example as much as I could. And I made a lot of mistakes and continue to still do that, but I try to do my best with them, and I think they certainly can be an inspiration. They can give you a different form of love, a form of love I never knew existed. Yeah. Between a parent and a child exists, and I think for my flights, I was worried about something bad happening to me and not seeing them again, and I write about that in the book too. And there was one point when I was in quarantine, when I first got to quarantine, my first flight, I had forgotten something and went home just to get another look at them. Mm-hmm. Just to look at them while they were sleeping that night. And as I went into quarantine, I wasn't going to see them until after the flight. And, it's different. It's almost a gift in some ways. The space flight is, you never know what day, when your last day is going to be. But if you look at probability wise, the day you launch into space, the probability is probably highest that that's going to be your last day. That's the most dangerous thing you'll ever do.
Sure.
And you know that there's going to be an outcome, and the outcome is going to be either good or bad. And if it's not good, if it's a bad outcome, you're not going to see these people again on Earth, and you don't know what's in store. And so you start to appreciate things a little bit more.
Yeah.
I just found myself trying to memorize what they look like and as best I could.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And I mean, it is easy for people to forget how dangerous being an astronaut is. And I mean, one of the darker aspects of your life, which you write about in Spaceman, is losing friends in the Columbia shuttle accident, especially when you're part of as tight-knit a group as you astronauts were. How did you find the strength to keep going after that happened?
That was the worst day of my life. And being an astronaut wasn't fun again for about a year after that. It really just wasn't fun. And I remember there was one point I was on a cross-country trip in a T-38. We were going out to California to look at some space station solar arrays. I was with a friend of mine, Kevin Ford, flying out there. And we stopped in Arizona. And I realized at that point that I was feeling happy about being an astronaut again. But it was, believe it or not, it was kind of a bad period, but it was also a very interesting period. I think what we did is we all kind of leaned on each other and we tried to support the families as best we could, trying to help them out as much as we could. And then also trying to move on. There are disappointments in life that you get. Some are personal and some are professional, and you have to keep going. And for us, we were able to kind of throw our time and effort into supporting the program and doing whatever we could. There were some amazing developments that happened. We had to figure out a way to repair the shuttle, to inspect the space shuttle. What could we do if you had something like this happen, where they took a piece of debris and put a hole in it in their wing?
Mm.
If that happened again, how could we prevent this from happening? And if it happened again, how could we save the crew and the space shuttle? And so it gave us a lot of work to do. And so we threw ourselves into that, and we also did what we could to help the families move on from this. And the role of faith there can be important as well, of trying to appreciate what can be learned from something and how important special life is, and how to try to appreciate every moment of it, how fragile it is. But it was just a terrible loss. It was a terrible thing that happened, and it took a while to start feeling good again after that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what are your hopes for the future of the space program now?
I think that there's a lot of excitement going on, particularly in some of these private companies. I was just on a cable news show program yesterday talking about this company called SpaceX. It had a problem in September with a problem with one of their rockets on the launch pad, and now they're going to launch again for the first time coming up here, hopefully in a few days. And that company, along with all these other companies, Blue Origin is another one, and Virgin Galactic is another one, but these companies each have their own little role where they're launching, in the case of some of them, launching cargo into space now, private companies providing the launch services, but also looking to launch people into space. So I think in general, what I hope is happening is this opening up of space to not just be governments for science and exploration, but also companies doing it for science exploration, hopefully some commercial profit, and also to get more people up there. I think we're at a point now where, you know, these companies are doing truly amazing things in what they're able to do, things that we only dreamed of, you know, the way that they're shooting off their rockets and returning them and pinpoint landing so they can be reused. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. And we're at that point where I think, you know, NASA, the government and other countries, their governments as well, working with us, have developed a lot of the technology and techniques. And over the years, you know, NASA's been around for a long time, and we've been sending people into space for a long time. And now I think we're at the point where we're turning that over to more of the commercial companies. So I think NASA has a lot to look forward to. The space station's still exciting. Two of my friends are up there, Peggy Whitson and Shane Kimbrough, along with a European astronaut and three Russian cosmonauts working together.
Okay.
So, you know, we have that going on, and hopefully we'll be going beyond low Earth orbit, and these commercial companies will be paving the way. So I think there's a lot to look forward to.
I want to thank Mike Massimino for joining me today to talk about his book, Spaceman, An Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. We are out of time, but Mike and I will keep talking and bring you the rest of our conversation on our next episode. Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The most difficult trials in life demand that we dig deep within ourselves to find the capacity for courage that God has bestowed upon the human soul. But courage begins with an act of the will to persevere through pain, suffering, and even failure. To help you along that path, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Finding the Courage Within. It offers insights on building character, cultivating the ability to act courageously, and making sacrifices for the greater good. To request your free copy of Finding the Courage Within, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.